Malka, Malka, did you hear the news? No, and only 6 months.
Where's Zadel? That Zadel. He's a nice fellow, and a quiet fellow, and one would hardly notice him. But when the whistle blows and the paper arrives, he's the king of Kasilivka. What's the matter with him?
What? I called and called me away.
CBS Radio Workshop, dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind. Carl Sandburg, poet, historian, novelist. The minstrel voice of America, the teller of stories and the singer of songs. Recorded on his 79th birthday.
I've been on early and late, New York City to the Golden Gate. And it looks like I'm never going to cease my wandering. There is a human stir throughout our American songs, with the heights and depths to be found in Shakespeare. The rich and the poor, robbers, murderers, hangmen, fathers and wild boys, mothers with a soft word for their babies, workmen on railroad steamboat ships, wanderers and lovers of home. They tell what life has been to them. It seems like every day when I'm at all in health, I've got to sing. I gotta go find the guitar and pluck a little at it and go over old songs and new songs, and as long as I live, I'm going to be learning songs. Torn from a world of tyrants beneath this western sky, we formed a new dominion, a land of liberty. The world shall own, we're freemen here, and as such shall ever be. Huzzah, huzzah, huzzah. For a free, free America. Lift up your hands, ye heroes, and swear with proud disdain. The rest that would ensnare you shall allay his snares in vain. Should Europe empty all her force, we'll meet her in parade. And fight, and shout, and fight for brave America. The call to hardship, toil, and combat runs like a blood-scarlet thread woven through the story of our people. It has cost to build this nation. Living men and women in struggle and risk, in self-denial and pain, in familiarity with sacrifice, wounds and death. Those living men of the past paid that cost. And the record of American youth in the last war, whether Korea or, but more particularly the World War. There are epics of valor and endurance and imagination out of our era that As it's so on so colossal a scale that very hard to get it. With heroism now, I think, in proportion to the population, there's as many heroes now as there ever were. There is a man. But it's a long, long while. I'm new to December. And the days go short when you reach September. And I have lost one too, and I walk a little lame, and I haven't got time for the waiting game. And the days turn to gold, and they grow few. September, November, and these few golden days I spend with you. These precious days I spend with you. Of course, I've been asked lots of times, what do you want out of life, Carl? What do you want most of all? They're trying to probe me. Well, I've been thinking about it, of course. All my life, I've been thinking about what I want out of life. And I guess I could say mainly five things. To be out of jail, first of all, to be out of jail. This is a free country. Something pretty nice about being out of jail. Second, to eat regular. Why not? And third, to get what I write printed. And fourth, we'll say, a little nice affection hither and yon over the American landscape. And then, maybe the fifth. Maybe the fifth thing that I need. It seems like every day when I'm at all in health, I just sing. And these few golden days I spend with you. These precious days I spend with you. What do I miss most at 80 that I would still like to have that I had in the 60s? Most. At 60, I could still run 50 yards at a fair speed. And I could run up most any stairs. Now I walk very slowly up the stairs. Not that I got any heart condition, but there are compensations. Seneca, the Roman philosopher, wrote about old age. I don't like the phrase. Frank Lloyd Wright and I are agreed that we have done some of our best work in our 70s, and he has done some of his best work in his 80s. I like the privilege of calling myself old if I like, but I don't like to be called old man. Because for one thing, I have a much younger heart for the things that the young love and enjoy over the world than most of the poets now setting forth their obscurantist lines. A whole lot of it is anti-democracy. The big general run of it. They'd be ashamed to run to act. What they want is involved pleasure. High and low windings. They are latitudinous and sepulchral. Ah! The most of them ain't never had no fun. Just plain fun. When I was a boy, only... even in the small towns now, there's the sidewalks, there's the concrete sidewalks, and there are the streets of that are concrete. Very few kids nowadays that have known the luxury of running barefoot in dust and in mud, and going to a corner and playing with a gang of kids till 8:30 or 9:00, and then going home and putting the feet under a pump. A luxury, doggone. As the years go by and the longer I live, the more I feel sorry for those who have a few millions and gotta have more millions, and never learn what Pascal meant in saying that the miseries of men come from not being able to sit alone in a quiet room. They gotta have radio now, they gotta have TV. The books were enough for Pascal. You listen to the World Series, and unless you step out and turn the darn sound off, you'd think that we're just running around wondering how they get a shave. Ha 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 ha! Are you fixed for blades? Cigarettes will spoil your life, ruin your health, and kill your baby. Poor little innocent child. They're so mild. All cigarettes are milder than all other cigarettes. The wonder of the age. I have often thought of the difficulties of running an apparatus that has its cultural phases. Where in a radio station, a TV station, reaching millions of people a day, and in the going, 18, 20 hours a day, 52 weeks a year, 365 days, just endless, that pressure on them. What to feed the listening?
It is.
Into one united community.
Who are indifferent. And then there are those who understand responsibility. Freedom. Whatever you want, freedom to put human utterance out on the air for millions of people to hear. That means responsibility, too. I was a motion picture reviewer of the Chicago Daily News for 7 years. I wrote over 1,000 motion picture reviews. And the number of classics among what they have produced out there, the number of classics is very low. Maybe 100, certainly not more than 200. They don't take themselves seriously. It's a game of playing with the public. Most of them try to strike at the subconscious, the blood rather than the brain, the primitive. Violence, sex, of course, those are in most of the great dramas and novels of all time. But the stress on them out there is a little too great. Elvis Presley.
Love me tenderly. Don't be cruel. Old Abe Lincoln come. Out of the wilderness. Out of the wilderness. Out of the wilderness. Old Abe Lincoln come. Out of the wilderness. Tommy in Illinois. Old Abe Lincoln come out of the wilderness, out of out of the wilderness, down in Illinois.
The American family of man runs through our songs, and they give us the feel and atmosphere, the layout and lingo of regions, of breeds of men, of customs and slogans, in a manner and air not given in regular written history. As a boy, politicians, the preachers, the Fourth of July orators, they talked about Lincoln without going into details. It became a vague figure to me as a boy. And after I had written the Rutabaga stories, I began asking why there was no good book about Lincoln for children. And I planned a book to be titled The Life of Abraham Lincoln for Young People. And then as I got into the material about his early life, I found there was so much that hadn't been presented as I would like to have had it presented to myself years previous. So I went to work on the Prairie Years, and soon had him elected and on the way to Washington. And the work ended up in 6 volumes that had something like 1.5 million words. The book to follow, Always the Young Strangers, that book about the first 20 years of my life, will be Ever the Winds of Chance, How They Blew Me Hither and Yon. In that book now I have reached where I'm going to meet a gal that has midnight black hair, still a few bronze hairs. She had bronze hair in her youth. And I find she's smarter than I am. She was Phi Beta Kappa at the University of Chicago. She would run rings around me in chemistry or mathematics. Well, I tie up with her, and it lasts 48 years. When I was writing pretty poor poetry, she told me to go on. When Israel was in Egypt, man, let my people go. I pressed who a heart they could not stand. Let my people go. Go down to Moses, way down Egypt land. Tell old Pharaoh, let my people go. Out of 1922, when the Ku Klux Klan was going pretty good in Illinois, man starts a restaurant. I was told in Peoria, Illinois, puts a sign in front, 100% American. Another man starts a restaurant across the street and puts a sign in the window, 200% American. And the first one comes across the street and says, what do you think you're trying to do here? You're looking for trouble? Brother, you got me wrong. You got me wrong. You hate only the Negroes and the Jews and the Catholics, but I hate the whole human race, without regard to race, creed, or color. One of these days, about 12 o'clock, this old world going reel and rock. Pharaoh's army got drowned. Oh, no, don't you weep, don't you know. The family of man. The family of man. There have always been egotists and madmen in the history of mankind. It's not beyond possibility that there will be the atomic war that will obliterate human life on the planet. The question is baffling. This is one crisis, the latest one. There have been others in the making of this nation. It has cost to build this nation. Living men of the past paid that cost. My children and yours have been given this heritage, this land of ours, by their toil and struggle. And has it been worth the cost they paid? I think it has. To do it took men willing to throw in with all they had, and they did that. And we've got to let those who now are to shape the future know what the present time came from and what it's worth as a heritage. For we know when a nation goes down and never comes back, when a society or a civilization perishes, one condition may always be found. They forgot where they came from. They lost sight of what brought them along. The hard beginnings were forgotten, and the struggles farther along. When the question is asked, why do you favor the democratic system when it holds so much waste, corruption, demagoguery, and other evils? We answer, because we have looked over all the other systems, found that they too have waste, corruption, demagoguery, and other evils. And we take our chances on the democratic system because of what it has that the other systems don't have. Under no other system can a man be so many different kinds of a fool and get away with it, and get paid for it. So long as he isn't interfering with other fools, he always has the alibi. This is a free country, ain't it? Personal freedom, a wide range of individual expression, a complete respect for the human mind and the human personality. This is the ideal of the democratic system. In all the literature, the documents of democracy, you can find this respect, this hope, this attitude of...
Acknowledgements are made to... This is Dan McDonald, inviting you to listen again.
Love, oh love, oh careless love, oh love, oh careless love, oh love, oh love, oh
careless love. Carl Sandburg at 79, historian, novelist, American minstrel, seeker of the American dream, and poet.
The people will live on. The learning and blundering people will live on. They will be tricked and sold and again sold, and go back to the nourishing earth for root holes. The people, so peculiar in renewal and comeback, you can't laugh off their capacity to take it. Brother may yet line up with brother. There are men who can't be bought. There are women beyond purchase. The fireborn are at home in fire. The stars make no noise. You can't hinder the wind from blowing. Time is a great teacher. Who can live without hope? In the darkness, with a great bundle of grief, the people march. In the night, and overhead, a shovel of stars for keeps, the people march. Where to? What next? Where to? What next?
You've been...
Thank you. fun. But we do make pretend that things would go.
This is at the Holtes in Bergen, North Dakota. The old father later talked.
I was here and knocked at the door, and Kleinsmith came over there, see? Well, I wasn't able to get my shoes on because that's a long drawer with me. Fast enough to get down there, so the last thing I'd order for this place. And then, I don't know, I'm sure they left the money for telegrams or something.
Well, reasonable.
Where'd you go? I think we're going.
You were going next to one door, didn't you?
You were up in your place?
Yeah, we were over there. I know I went over to Broughton. The storm had come over there and climbed through it.
Yeah,
I knew the people. Yeah. They were going to be evicted from the farm. Two brothers were living together, and the bank and Drake wouldn't have the movie. From the farm. But the trouble there was that we had all making plans, you know, for Dr. Christian and our own, not sent, like I said, as a committee to go to see the banker. But Broughton there and a few of the other guy, they got together first and they went to see the banker first. And of course the banker refused to renew their lease. And some brought and said, well, if we want to renew the lease now, why is it we get on our association? Well, he's got that something right there. He wouldn't rent out to that brother he'd rented to before, but he just rented to his other brother. Didn't make any difference, but they both lived in the same house anyway. So that stopped us, you know, we didn't have a chance to.
But you would have my telegram to the governor and whatnot, and
well, that's possible. I remember that.
Yes,
I remember that.
I had just put a moratorium in Langer, but you see, it didn't turn out that way. You know, it's only when the holidays that seemed that the moratorium wanted that day. And this poor fellow that had the lease on the place, he had some nervous disease, you know, and he got bedridden for a couple of weeks. Just from the fact that he was going to be forced off the place. All he asked for was to stay there another year. He's already seated right in the fall, you know, and they lose that, and they put in their tickets right for the fall. But after they got these telegrams, you know, we heard from Welford, and he had wired the banker, and the banker had agreed to stop proceedings and so forth. So, you know, we got a chance to have any action there.
What are you talking about?
Some people we could rally that would come if we notified one or two.
The most active local was around here. And I don't know just how many we had in the local. I suppose there'll be 56 of them. Actually, I have to ask your members.
Tom Diamond.
I wasn't there that time.
Well, I wasn't there either. Arvin Owen was there. And it seems to me, you know, they paid out a certain amount of dues.
It was early when they first started, was it 32 or 33? 33. business very soon. Well, they asked for a year later.
Yeah.
He wanted a, not from a big, Kansas City, and then one guy, he was on the bill.
That
was about in
the 34.
Was that? We didn't ever ask for the, we never got in there. We couldn't have known. We had to just produce credentials that we were all right, or else. There was evidence to prove that we were really interested. And when we had a party, that I would finish up the onion, we had a party and had a one across the road. There was a section of potatoes that had been picked, so we went off there and we found a few leftover potatoes, potato potatoes, but some ate of us here. Then when town got a pint or 2 pints of moonshine, and well, next morning there was no money left, being that we didn't have nothing anyhow. A mile from where we topped an onion. But there, we didn't have no money, and we were going to chop our potatoes about 4 or 5 days from then. Well, I had to go on town, and there was a friend of mine, he went to cream and bumped some butter milk, you know. And I was hungry, and we got back to where we stayed, we came to shack out in the country. I found an old potato, or a bread wrapper there. I found one custard bread. I ate that. Well, that wouldn't go very long, so I had a watch I got from the Pope. And so we went out to the place where we had our job, and I borrowed $2 from for the advertised us for, what, 3 days, that $2.
First organizer, the holiday from Wisconsin, and he was a minister. And he used to sing, sing some religious songs or something, but you know.
Never had?
No, that, I was wondering if you would take
it. Yeah, Colin. Collins,
his father name, huh? Collins. And I didn't see him come in, and I didn't know who he was when he did come in, you see. And, you know, the opposition had lined up 2 fire wagons outside there, you know, and unrolled the hoses and everything, you see. And he was a little cautious when he was speaking. Well, if we could have gotten to him a little sooner, you know, before he started speaking, I felt the put it on full blast.
Oh, what's the other
thing? You see, Reverend Jones Belva, you know, he was head of the relief at Belva here, at the western part of the county here. And,
You know, I'll get you ladies on this also.
He's big, job was to keep people from getting any relief, I guess. He had charge of that. I know large amounts of bacon and cheese and whatnot, you know, and he kept it away from people so long until the worms started moving it around. And then he started giving it away in big quantities, you know, and he had called up counter then when we had our county meeting to have every person on hand, you know, that they were that was pretty husky to meet every kind of roughnecker coming in town.
I can tell about the experience we had there was pretty good.
Bill was another time at Oregon. Well, I was stuck halfway between here and Bismarck. I had big rain and we had to stop at a farm place. I tried to make the meeting, but I couldn't.
Oh.
I didn't get there.
We had a meeting down there in Hell one time. We had to meetings several different places. They had a petition going on and let us address to the Farm Relief Center. On how much coal, what we need to supply them for the winter. So much coal, so much groceries, so many dollars of groceries, clothing and so on. And there's an added meeting down in Dallas. And I happened to be up there, we were kind of promised the Farmers Union service station there. So we'd advertised for a meeting down there in Oregon, and I went down there. And I, my dad's cousin was, he used to be in the Socialist Party and all that. Was really just anti-communist as could be. And he had Brian Cream at the Farmers Union station, so he could have talked him into not letting us in doing that. So another service station man came over and told us we had to ignore his service station. We couldn't get a meeting hall. So we had them over there, and there must have been about 3 dozen guys down there come in, and the Orman started talking once and talking about the release of Jason Hall, what they were there for, and so on. And finally, this cousin of my dad's come in, and by God, he says, "Well, don't listen to these guys here, because they're communists." And then beside him, saying that, and we had the stupid and put it here, Reverend Jones, at the meeting there. But you know, one Orban didn't say much anymore, and by God, we had another fellow step up from Galva there. And he says, "By God, what well, this guy, but this guy is talking about his own king." And you know, before look what this guy is, they just raped him with a cold. And you know, well, for one thing, we didn't make it that thing, because this year superintendent for Reverend Jones, he said that he come out that and admitted after a while that
Julian,
mistake we made there was that we didn't get Jones down there, and we figured out there was a meeting there, the people out there, we were working with Reverend Jones there.
Good share of it anyway. By the time I come up here, I broke up from my dad's band there, but bought that was already broke up, you know.
Mm-hmm.
All the trees to see it on.
It was a treeless
glad. Oh yeah, there was a place that you could find as much even as a shrub was on along Mount River. Mm-hmm. That was natural trees, you know, along the river, but that's the only place.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's different parts. Standing Rock?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I was up and drew a number on that.
You did?
Yeah, Standing Rock and a reservation up in Montana. What was the name of that? That's good enough then. That your number was drawn. Then you had to pay so much naked for the land, you see. You still had to kind of the same thing at home, you had to live on it just the same, but I don't remember now what it was, $1.25 an acre or something like that, and then you had to pay a fourth of that down, I think, at the time that you kind of filed, and the balance, I think, in 4 or 5 years, well, in 4 or 5 payments. Finds more people that drew, you know, than what their land for, you know.
Oh.
If you just happen to be lucky, I suppose I don't know just exactly how they did it, but I suppose they done it about in the same way as any other lottery. I suppose that you put the numbers and each name.
Another place they didn't want yet.
They might have been scattered all over the reservation there, but see, the reservation is pretty big, you know, and they just kept on for many days, you know,
mm-hmm.
and coming and going all the time. Of course, from Minnesota, I knew well from the time we lived down there, and they were up here visiting, but they had no intention going up there to register, you know, for land. I don't think she ever went up there because she never had the intention of going up there anyway. You know, took it away from somebody else, you know. But then, of course, rather than really take it away from anybody else, because whoever And they were honest, for example, whoever didn't, it wasn't like Harry Montana.
It was
legal in a way. You could sit and send for it. You couldn't sell it here.
Oh.
But they had, Minnesota.
Oh.
Minnesota was west, and all the eastern states, they were west.
So that?
4th of July celebrations. They celebrate the 4th of July in Velva. Brian Figure, you probably remember him too. Maybe you were moved out of Minot at that time. For a man of Louis Stearns, do you remember him?
I think I saw him in the paper though.
He listened to him. He's a good speaker.
Oh,
I thought I listened to just to hear him talk, and I have listened to him all night. I remember the name of sure. There's another fellow that he used to come down to Bergen here and see. I'm pretty sure your dad was down here too. There's another fellow I can't. Yeah, he was from Minor. No, it's one of the
socialists. What was it?
Who come to treasure?
Oh.
They put me on,
there,
and
you
remember now how many. I never went out. I've never done anything but I never went out camping at home. And there was Kennedy that year.
Where was the library?
Right now in Bergen at that time, the library was my store. get elected too, because I had that store, and I didn't want to be on the ticket, but the locals they were the ones that put me on there, and because northwest of here. About 5 miles. He was a good speaker, and he used to come down here and talk, they were really strong socialists. There's a bunch south, northeast of Berlin. I don't think right in this territory around Bergen, I don't think there wasn't over 3 or 4 of them, that was against them, and one of them was one of the storekeepers in Bergen, and he finally had to turn because he was losing his trade, but he turned socialist too, but he had a voted socialist, but he turned socialist anyway, and he was such a strong socialist, I'm saying. That's from his customer. Is Jack Benny?
Yeah.
About 3 years, but I had to pay social security tax for 2 years, See law for the farmers didn't go into effect until 55, you see. And I had to pay social security tax for both 55 and 56, you see,
mm-hmm.
for 18 months. Oh, I have great for that money.
owned your farm on a small scale all the time, ever since I started farming on my own. The most wheat that I ever had even to start with, I started renting, and the most wheat I ever did raise was 150 acres in a year, you see. And crop during the years that I farmed. Well, I could count them years each and one on the fingers on one hand and still have a few left over. The first crop I had was in 1919. 21 was nothing, and 22 there was fair crop. 23 there was nothing, 24 wasn't so bad. 25 is really the best crop that I had, between 25 and 28. 26 is nothing. In 26 I passed 75 bushels of wheat. And in 27 there was nothing, very little. In 28 was pretty good. In 29, it wasn't much again, you see. And then during the 30s, there was nothing again.
Yeah.
Didn't raise, get hay or anything, you know, corn or anything. So I think I could, easily count the years on the fingers of one hand and still have, anyway, 1 or 2 years to go on. And then extra and...
Planted.
Yeah. Hmm. Between the 40 and 50, you know, that there's some pretty good crops. But I didn't have enough land either. See, when there was good years, so and there were. Around there where we lived, you couldn't rent an acre of land.
Well, you can't tell when the good years are going to be either.
No.
Or the good prices,
but
you
now,
have to have the crop.
No, it don't make much difference, because you can't plant any anymore.
But
yes, since they started to set the price for the wheat, and get a pretty good price for the wheat, and then happen to start getting another rain years where we got pretty good crops, and still I never had any crop to Mount Clinton as far as the yield is concerned, because I had too little land. I had to put in about the same land put in all the time, you know, so I got to run out, you know. That I never had an average of over 12, 14 bushels per acre, except in 1925. That year, my wheat averaged 25 bushels, but then the land was pretty good because it hadn't been farmed the year before. That's the first crop I had on that land that we've been living on to work in. Just laid over, you see, 1 year, and made that much difference.
Between 12 and 25 bushels.
Yeah.
But you couldn't afford to do that. You didn't have enough land to afford to.
No, I had to put in everything, you know. Of course, these last years, and trying to summer follow some every year. Well, on summer follow, that's pretty good, you know. That's going as high as 25 bushels, all right. But then, I never had land enough, so I could raise wheat only on summer follow. I had to use old land too, so when you and the old land, you see, cut down the average, so much that the average
I'm sure it didn't come out over, not over 14, 15 bushels, anyway, the average. And by the time you have more machinery too, then.
Yeah.
Basement?
Yeah.
Big enough.
Then what are they saying?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that sun was shining for a moment, now it's gone.
Yeah, it's raining.
There's many loss of life?
No. But there were small buildings. 75 bars between Russo and here. They came between well, I guess they torn in, or just went as far as
because, well, most of the time, well, one place is ranting from, another where he's getting hurt. Within a week, all week, in order to raise $400 the first year, $400 cash in.
The noise in the background are the women doing dishes.
That was free labor,
you know. Yeah, well, that's the way with them Russians, around Park, you know. They were looking for their free labor, they couldn't have many people, but they can move to the big farms, you know. But they got big families, you know, a lot of help. And up here, he bought,
Thank you.
Thank you. In this recording, you heard the Concerto for Violin and Orchestra in A Minor by Johann Sebastian Bach. The soloist was Isaac Stern, and the Prague Festival Orchestra was conducted by Pablo Casals. You are tuned to 770 KUOM in Minneapolis and St. Paul. You'll hear more music in just 15 minutes on KUOM on your afternoon concert. Polio isn't finished yet. Millions must still receive Salk polio vaccines. Thousands for whom the Salk vaccine can come too late still need help to recover from crippling. Give to finish the polio fight. Join the 1957 March of Dimes. Do it today. It's 2:15.
Well, we must be getting near the place. This land doesn't look any different to me. Just part of the flat, level river bottom. The letter said that the excavation was near the bank of an ancient river, or something like that. Suppose they'll have a power shovel.
Well, the speedometer shows 8 3/10 miles from town, so we better be on the lookout. It's supposed to be about 9 miles from town.
Don't see how the digging could be near here. The Mississippi's a couple miles over on the other side of the valley.
Well, I'm going by the directions that Editor Smith gave us. I guess they've uncovered, at least hope to dig up, some old relics and things used by the inhabitants of this early settlement.
Well, you've got to have a lot of imagination to be an archaeologist. That gives us some of the requirements. What gets me is why the letter said that they were digging near the river when the river
is... Say, this must be the place. See, there's cars over there near the bluff.
Sure, that must be the place. You know, I'm afraid that this is just another wild goose chase. I don't see anything of an early village or on the banks of an ancient river.
Well, don't ask me. We'll soon find out. Hang on now. We've got some rough road ahead.
Minnesota School of the Air presents Discovering the North Star State on Following Conservation Trails. Hello there. I'm Bill Dale, bringing you our conservation story for today. I suppose you're puzzled by the conversation you just heard between a couple of newspaper reporters on the trail of a feature story about an archaeological excavation. Well, so am I. Why would the letter giving the directions to the digging...